You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario since 1922. Find and follow us on Instagram at CFRC Music. Coming up on the special campus takeover of our airwaves, we're talking to 16 upper year students in DRAM 439, Advanced Performance Creation, along with their professor, Dr. Mariah Mo Horner, about this year's TheoFest. TheoFest is a free festival of 16 original solo performances from students in the Dan School of Drama and Music at Queen's University. Performances take place in every nook and cranny of Theological Hall on Queen's campus on April 10th and 11th, 2026. Learn more about the show, check out the performance schedule, and reserve your free tickets now at theofest.ca. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, and on today's special takeover of our airwaves, we have Dr. Mo Horner from the Queen's Drama Department.
Hi, Ara.
Welcome. You have something very exciting coming up. I'm assuming this is the culmination of quite a bit of work for the year. Do you want to tell us what you have happening?
Yes. So I am the lucky professor of a course in the Dan School of Drama and Music called Drama 439 Advanced Performance Creation. And we've been working together all year since September. And I'm really proud to announce that our students have created a 16-show festival of original live performance called TheoFest. So this is the second year, I think, under the banner TheoFest, but the third year of this kind of like final graduating individual original show creation.
And that was what I was going to ask. So 16 shows, 16 individuals.
Yes.
We'll be talking to many of the students a little later on, but it's a very cool idea. So it's, I'm assuming, solo shows.
Yes, solo shows.
And not only are they unique in that they are created by the students, acted by the students, but also the way that they're using space is very cool. Do you want to talk very briefly about that?
Yeah, too? Definitely. So, I mean, one of the best things about the Dan School of Drama and Music is that you learn both by thinking and studying, but you also learn by doing, right? So this gift of this course is that these students have, you know, taken all the things that they've learned in this program, and now they're like, okay, now you get to create what you want to create. So the very beginning of the term, we told the students they could pick any space in Theological Hall, right? There's at least two kind of theatery spaces, Convocation Hall and the Rotunda Theater, but there's also beautiful spaces all over the place. There's a chapel, there's kind of a basement green room hangout that students spend a lot of time in, a lot of interesting classrooms and offices. Theological Hall is one of the original buildings on Queen's campus, so it houses so much history, but also for the drama students, it's home, mm-hmm. right? So it's so special for these students to be able to, you know, spend all this time in the building and then kind of gift it and say goodbye with a little bit of a love letter to these interesting corners. You know, like I said, some of the students are in theaters, but there are also students in bathrooms and hallways and dressing rooms.
Well, I think in the world of writing, for example, there's the idea of seeing space as its own character.
Yes.
And I think it's really interesting to see, obviously, site-specific theater being a really strong example of that, how you can work with the space and make it part of your piece.
Yeah. You know, space for me, I have a long history of being a site-specific creator in Kingston. And for me, exactly like you say, space is a character. Space is a witness. We're so lucky to be in this kind of space in Kingston at Queen's in Theological Hall that has witnessed like 200 years of students. And you kind of can't deny that magic when you go into a place like Theo or even CFRC and you're sitting in here and you can kind of feel the ghosts as companions. And for me as a professor, I was a student in this department 10 years ago. So what a special kind of relational nostalgia, a real kind of connective tissue of me with these students through the space. I sat in these same rooms. I've made shows in these same weird corners. And what a gift it is to imagine not only my history, their history, but also 200 years of students who've been doing this kind of work. One of the best days that we had in this class is we took the class to the Queen's Archives, met with the fantastic Heather Holmes, and she gave us this amazing package of all of these materials from Theological Hall, old playbills from the 60s, posters and photos from the 30s. We found a photo of a group of students gathered around a piano in the green room in the basement of Theological Hall. The piano's still there.
Oh.
You know, like yeah. That is magic. And there is a little bit of a secret surprise happening at the end of every night of TheoFest that involves the piano in the green room. Mm-hmm. So we're really trying to connect ourselves to the history of the space and to also assert ourselves as, you know, this is our home. This space is special to us. You know, we really care about it.
And I think it's a space that not everyone has had the opportunity to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Queens is a huge campus, and it's always fascinating to me the different age of buildings and sometimes the divisions between, you know, different programs. There are buildings that I went to Queens as well that I'd never been in until I went into Poster or something like that.
Yes.
So a really cool opportunity for people that are curious about exploring the history of spaces, as well as obviously supporting these emerging artists.
Yes. And also being able to see the spaces through their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's, you know, we'll talk more, you'll hear about all the shows later in the special, but many of the ways these students created the shows were from the space. You know, they sat in the space and they imagined what could be in here. How can I show the audience what I see and what I feel in this room?
And I imagine like an interesting educational opportunity, because I'm sure there are people that might have been disappointed that they didn't get their first choice or got into a space and wondered, like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And now we get to see what they did with it.
Totally. We talk a lot in this class about the idea of right sizing. You know, I've been an independent theater producer in Kingston for almost 15 years, and you never get the $1 million budget. You know, you never get the perfect theater and the perfect amount of money to make the show. But I say to my class all the time, I will die on the hill in knowing that the big theater and the big money is not better. You know, one of my favorite shows I ever made here was in Brian's Record Option. We had 5 audience members, teeny tiny space. But you can't deny the magic that was in that room, because that was, you know, it was full of that kind of spirit. So I'm really proud of the students for being adaptable and also really trusting their own creativity. You know, you can make the magic wherever you are and with whatever you have. We talk a lot about mutual aid in this class, about how part of our creative impulse was using what we have to make something, as opposed to thinking what we want to make and then plugging it in with resources. We use overhead projectors in this festival. We use flashlights. We use each other, right? They're all working on each other's shows as much as their own, right? So we have what we need to make the work. And I think this is a nice metaphor for, you know, beyond the theater and how I feel about the world generally. But I'm so proud of the students for taking that into their own creative process.
It's an empowering thing when you realize that you can alter the intended use of something to make something beautiful or
yes.
powerful or impactful too.
Definitely. We talk a lot about this in theater and performance studies, right? The idea of making the familiar strange, right? Making the stone stony and thinking about it again. What happens when you ask an audience to really listen to a room that they've been in 100 times? They hear something new. They see something new, right? And there is that kind of really embodied sense of being in a place that comes from putting art in a place that art maybe doesn't necessarily belong or hasn't been before.
I am here with some of the amazing students of
Drama 439.
And would you like to introduce yourself for our listeners?
Of course. My name is Ashley Miller, and I'm a 4th year drama major history minor at Queens. And I'm super excited to be working on a show this term. My show is called All the World's a Stage, and it is an adaptation of Shakespeare's plays. It takes place 15 minutes before a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, and my character is playing Helena. And the interesting thing is it is a collage of all his works, so I've taken lines from various plays, reordered them, and made them into an entirely new show.
Very fun. And in addition to an innovative new show, I understand that place has a real impact on the shows that you're doing as well. So do you want to talk about the process that folks went through in this class in terms of figuring out what they were writing and where they were performing it?
Of course. So in terms of process, we spent a lot of time during the first term last year working on different workshops and sort of experimenting with different ways to approach theater and different styles that we might like, as well as exploring the building that is Theological Hall and whether there was a space we particularly wanted to do our show in. So I chose the dressing room. I wanted to do a site-specific show, which I've never done before, and I thought no better place to do it than a dressing room for this type of show. And I think it definitely informed my decisions when writing it, because one of the themes I'm sort of playing with is performance versus reality. So being in a real space while simultaneously experiencing a performance that is about performance, I thought would be very interesting.
How do you think the decision to use the dressing room informed your writing as you went?
So one of the things that was really interesting about that space, it's got a huge mirror on the wall. So I was sort of playing with where I can use that in the writing, like whether I'm facing the mirror, facing away from the mirror, and how that tells a story, and where I can sort of bring the audience into it. Because in the world of the play, it doesn't necessarily make sense to have, you know, an audience in a dressing room with an actor while she's getting ready, but I'm sort of using them as if they were other actors getting ready with me. Oh. So I think it's really interesting.
Very cool. I love when the audience gets to be part of that performance. And speaking of, how many people are able to sit in the dressing room during your performances?
We're experimenting a little bit with that right now. It should be about 15 people, depending on how many we can squeeze in. But we're trying to have as many people see it as we can.
Hello, my name is Will Mercer. I'm a fourth year drama and English student here at Queen's.
And Will, what have you written for this class?
So my show is called Disguise, and it's a personal reflection over four acts with original music. And it's sort of an exploration of vulnerability and performance and sort of where they intersect and sort of where that line between performer and, you know, me is.
And when you came into this class, I understand everybody was sort of asked to choose a room. What did you choose? Was it your first choice? And how did it inform what you ended up writing?
Right. So, yeah, the room choice actually came pretty late for me, just because at the start, I really had no idea what I wanted my show to be. So I did kind of bounce between a couple rooms in Theo. One of them originally was maybe like either the staircase outside of this room right now, or even the elevator. But I ended up with the rotunda. And I'd say the show came first and then the room. So I don't think the room necessarily has informed the choices I'm making, but it is allowing me to bring in sort of more production elements now, because the space, it's a theater, so it's more set up for that kind of stuff. So it means I do get to think about like lighting and also potentially projections and things. So that's really exciting in terms of the bigger kind of vision of the show.
I was imagining this kind of Amazing Race or Survivor type thing on the first day where it's like everybody had to like run and dibs on a room, but right. That's cool that you had
some
time
to think. That, but I was just a little late to the party,
yeah.
I guess.
Hey, it sounds like you found a great space. How many audience members can attend at one time?
So in the rotunda, it's, I believe, max 40. But yeah, I might play with the number a little bit. We'll see. But yeah, max 40.
Cool. And is there a participatory element to this, or is it more of a solo performance?
This one is more of a solo performance. I do want to sort of invite the audience to actively engage and think about kind of the piece that's being explored. But yeah, it's not participatory.
Hi, I'm Annalise Lund.
And Annalise, what play are you performing as part of this class?
So I wrote a show called Someone Not Sepia. It's just about a girl in the 1860s. I think so often when we think of history, we think of like the big world-changing events and people who like change the world, and we often forget about kind of the ordinary day-to-day people, which I think is a bit of a shame because that's kind of the history that is most like us. And even like people in the past were separated from them by different ways of thinking, different scientific advancements, and things like that. There are still things about just being people that kind of will transgress like history and time. Things will always remain the same. And what my play deals about is that there's always going to be a universal experience of like being a girl, no matter what time period you're in.
And where are you performing this?
So I'm performing this actually in the room we're in right now, Theological Hall, room 118.
Why did you choose this room, and has it informed your development of this play in any way?
So the room actually didn't inform the play at all. I chose the room kind of based on my idea and what I had already written. I think my idea for like my setup and my set is I wanted to create an enclosed historical space that over the course of the show, through use of like props and costumes, could expand beyond what it was at the beginning.
And how many audience members can you accommodate for your performance?
I believe the capacity for this room as of now is 14. I'm not sure if that'll change, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be 14 per show.
Okay, and is your character interacting with the audience, or is there a participatory element?
Not a lot of audience participation in the show, but I'm playing a few different versions of the same character, which will be clear when you see the show. But that character does talk to the audience and interact with the audience a little bit.
It's an interesting exploration because it is, as you say, those small figures often we don't pay attention to, and historically if you weren't male and white, your history often didn't get written. So cool to explore the through lines. I am here with
Cassian Manderson.
And Cassian, what have you written for this class?
Yeah, so my show is called Among the Stars. Basically, in real life, Russia sent the first living being to space, which was a street dog, in 1957. In fake life, Canada hired a scientist and inventor to send another animal to space in 1958, and my show is about how that's going.
May I ask what the animal is, or is this part of the surprise?
You're gonna have to come and find out.
Okay. And where are you performing this in Theological Hall?
I'm actually performing it in one of the professor's office, in Mo's office, which is upstairs on the third floor.
And how did you decide on that space, and did it inform the writing of your play?
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted the space to actually be the inventor's office, so it seemed like it made the most sense to use Mo's office. But another big part is my show has parts of the set that are permanently set up for the duration of my show, including a marble track, and so I needed a space that I would be allowed to keep things.
Oh yeah, and not get them knocked over.
Yeah, exactly.
How many audience members can Mo's spacious office accommodate?
It's only 8 per show, which is very exclusive. So only 3 shows, 8 people, minus 1 for my mom.
Okay, fair. And does this have participatory elements in it, or will the audience be engaging with your performance?
It's kind of a fun in-between. My character is talking directly to the audience. You are sort of a character in the story, but the audience won't be required to be actively participating much. They can if they would like to, but it's mostly me talking at you.
Okay. Well, if you think that sounds interesting, if you want to scope out an office in Theological Hall, find out what Animal Canada sent to space, then this sounds like the play for you. Congrats for getting near the culmination of what I know has been a year-long process.
I'm Devin Mahoney.
And Devin, what is the play that you've written? And can you give listeners a little summary of what it's about?
Yeah, the play I wrote is called Dog Face, and it's about this woman who has been trapped in the chapel for many years because she is just too hairy and just too outside of what society thinks a woman should look like. And she has to kind of perform and trick the audience into letting her out. So that's her goal, is to try to get the audience to accept her, or, you know, she tries to con them into letting her out.
So I'm guessing this takes place in the chapel. What made you choose that space, and did it inform your writing of the play?
Well, there was a lot of like versions of the play. I knew I wanted to do it in the chapel just because it's so kind of out of the world of the rest of the building. I didn't want to do it in a classroom because I wanted it to just seem like you're stepping into another world, because it's supposed to be kind of like a freak show, sideshow type of vibe. I wanted it to have that kind of grand vibe to it. So it was kind of influencing my show, like, oh, do I want to go to kind of like a religious path? But I decided against it and just kind of chose to have it represent, yeah, another world.
And obviously there's some audience participation in this play. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and why you want to engage with the audience?
Mm-hmm. So actually that was a big challenge for me, was how do I get the audience to not engage? Because I do invite the audience a lot to try to talk to me and buy me and all of these different things, but I didn't want them to answer because I wanted it to keep being a challenge that I had to overcome. And then, spoiler alert, eventually let myself out of the room. So I wrote a little script for my friend Ishan to do at the very start of the show as he ushers the audience in, to just kind of be like, you know, dog face, don't look her in the eyes, she'll try to trick you, don't let her out, kind of going on about how I'm this monster that everyone should avoid and stay silent.
Okay, so if you're listening and you're planning to go, pay attention.
Yes.
It's all a trick, don't listen. Well, congratulations on getting this far in the process. It must be exciting to be close to performing.
My name's Elliot Norman.
And Elliot, what are you performing as part of this class?
I'm performing my show, which is called As Long As You're Laughing, which is about a stand-up comedian who's trying to put on a stand-up show in kind of the post-apocalypse. So it's in a post-apocalyptic setting, but they're in sort of a quasi-safe space, and he's trying to make people laugh. Whether or not it's successful is up for debate.
Okay, and speaking of space, do you want to talk a little bit about the room that you ended up choosing to perform in, and did this inform what you were writing at all?
I actually am performing in this room, so 118. One of the main things I wanted for my show was to have a black curtain as a background, so that's the main reason why I wanted this space. It's also a decent size, and it's able to be kind of blacked out, so like the curtains can cover the windows and stuff. So that was the main concern, and I could have chairs for a proper audience.
And how many audience members are you going to have set up in this room?
I believe about 14 is what we said.
And did you write a bunch of jokes to see what people's response is?
Not particularly. I've sort of written, I wrote my script and then I've ran it by a couple people, the person who's going to be assisting with my show and then with Mo. And so far it seems to have worked. It's the kind of show where certain jokes that I've wanted to land have landed, but in general they don't necessarily have to work. Like, I say a couple times, like, maybe these jokes aren't actually very good.
Kind of fun to play with the cringe factor that is, I think, inherently built into some stand-up comedy routines, right?
Yeah, there's the combination of that, and then also the show, while I want it to be comedic, it's also kind of dark and serious a little bit, because it is kind of talking about the end of the world and what's the point of, like, laughing or trying to find any joy if everything's terrible all the time, which, yeah.
Is topical.
Yeah, it's topical, yeah, which unfortunately, I first wrote it as a short film a couple years ago, and then I very much adapted and changed it into this show. And yeah, it just kind of keeps getting more, oh, but it's obviously taken to the extreme with like the end of the world and such.
Right.
Hello, my name is Ishan Kumar. I am a fourth year joint honors drama and film student here at Queen's University.
And Ishan, what is the play that you'll be performing? And can you give listeners a little bit of a summary of what it's about?
Certainly, yes. Yeah. So my show is Make a Deal. It is a totally normal game show with nothing sinister happening underneath. There is a prize for the winner. So come on down, work with your fellow audience members, and maybe walk away with a little prize. Who knows?
Sounds delightfully wholesome. And where is this game show taking place?
In the Rotunda.
And what informed your decision to use the Rotunda, and has that impacted what you ended up writing?
So personally, I'm a big theater tech individual, and the Rotunda just has the capacity for a lot of the tech that I wanted to explore within the show, particularly theater lighting. I want theater lighting to matter a lot within the show. I mean, it's a game show after all, right? It's supposed to feel lively. And truth be told, I've wanted to do a show like this for a couple years. Like, the Fringe class has existed for a while, and I was like, if I'm ever in there, this might be an idea I explore. I got in here, I was like, this is the idea I'm going to explore, and part of that idea is the lighting, and the Rotunda just has the lighting that I can use.
And I'm assuming, obviously, there's audience participation in this as well?
Yes, yes. If you are going to be coming to see the show, do anticipate participating in some form.
Excellent. Any hint of the prizes, or do people have to come to find out what they might win?
You'll just have to come and find out.
Well, sounds like a great deal. How can you pass that up? And thanks so much, and break a leg.
Of course, thank you.
I am Fiona Morin.
And Fiona, what have you written for this class?
I have written I did some Google searching, and I found out that there's a list of what makes someone considered to be an eldest daughter. So I took that list and I reworked it, because I think that the list can apply to everyone and not just eldest daughters.
Okay, interesting. And where are you performing this?
I'm performing this in Convocation Hall, which is in Theological Hall, and it's a very big lecture hall, but I've chosen to do it on the stage behind a curtain because I want it to be intimate and a small audience.
Very cool. A fun use of the space. And was Convocation sort of your first choice for this?
I actually wanted to do it on the balcony of Convocation Hall, and then I realized that that made me really nervous, and I was just a little person on this big balcony. So instead, I talked to my professor, Mo, and they were like, why don't you do this instead? And I found a lot of comfort in that space.
Cool. And exciting for audience members, too, because I'm sure there are a lot of people that have never had the opportunity to be on a stage, let alone that stage.
Well, exactly, for sure.
How many audience members can participate in your show at any one time?
We're going with 10 right now, but I'm open to adding some more seats if the demand is there.
Okay, and is there any audience participation invited, or is this more of an experience for them?
It's very much an experience. I will be doing a lot of talking at them, but they are encouraged to answer if they so wish, but very much they're just watching me go through the motions.
Well, very cool. Sounds like a really fun opportunity.
My name is Nicole Lindegger. Most people just call me Nick. And my show is called The Claws of Devotion and the Soul Left Behind. And I'm performing in the chapel in Theological Hall. And my show is, I would consider it an experimental abstracted piece about a bride who died on her wedding day. And she's kind of now in purgatory waiting to pass on. And she's waiting for her fiance to arrive to still marry her before she can move on from this physical world that she's trapped in. And she's been stuck waiting, and she's kind of coming to terms but resisting accepting the fact that her husband's never going to come for her, and she's died an unmarried woman, so she's kind of grappling with that. And we're seeing her at the state where her world is kind of collapsing, and she's just really having to deal with that. So it's a lot of physical work that I'm doing as the performer in the piece, and I'm playing a lot with the scenography in the chapel. So a lot of lighting, a lot of candles, a lot of the visual design elements. I'm trying to really heighten the atmospheric element of the chapel, and that was also a part of my inspiration for the piece as well. Like, I was drawn to the chapel because of the stained glass windows and all of that rich history that it has, and the relationship between religion and woman in that sanctuary of marriage. So that's what inspired me to use that space, and that's a little bit about my show.
Okay, fantastic. And how many attendees can be in to watch your performance at any one time?
My show can fit about 40 people. You are sitting in the pews of the church as if you were going there for, I guess, a Sunday service, and then you get to see a show instead.
Okay. I love how closely tied what you've written is to the space that you're using. Was the chapel your first choice?
The chapel was my first choice. When I was in first year, I was exploring this building, Theological Hall, to find my classrooms, and I decided to do some other exploring. So the chapel I actually found before my first day of classes actually started, and I was immediately drawn to the space. You can even like smell the old wood of the room and just the beauty of the stained glass windows and the organ. You know, you can play the organ, you know, if you just go in there. So it was always a place that I was attracted to over the course of my time at Queen's.
Break a Leg, it sounds like a really fascinating piece, and I hope that you have a really great reception to it. I'm personally a big fan of experimental and abstract and surreal things, so it sounds right up my alley.
Awesome. All right. I hope to see you there.
My name is Olivia Wright Buchanan, or better known as Liv around here.
And Liv, can you tell listeners what play that you've written for this class?
Yes, it's called The Writer's Room.
Very cool. Where is the Writer's Room located?
The Writer's Room is taking place in Conn Hall, inside of Theological Hall. So it's the biggest space next to the Rot. It's mainly used as a lecture space, but they used to hold grad and convocation. That's where it gets its name. Yeah, it's a large, beautiful theater, essentially.
Not necessarily what you might think of when you think of the term writer's room, when writers tend to be in small spaces. So what inspired you to choose that space, and how did that inform what you wrote for this?
When I first came to Queens, that was kind of the first room I discovered on my own. I thought it was beautiful. There was a grand piano sitting there and a stage. I'm a dancer and a piano player, and I was starting to dabble in writing when I got to Queens, and I spent pretty much every minute of free time I could find or fight for in that room.
Excellent. It is a memorable room. Some squirrels sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yep, we're one with nature in that room for sure.
I guess I was asking earlier how many people can fit in that room, but you can have quite the crowd in that room.
Yes. I think the capacity is probably around 120 people or 120 seats. I've tried to limit it to 30 on average, because a writer's room, as you described, is typically smaller. And if people could sit in a circle, that would be ideal. When you work with your classmates or collaborators in a writing space, you're often facing each other. There's no one focus. But the more the merrier. I'll happily open it up to as many people that want to come.
And can you give a little nutshell summary or hint about what people might expect when they attend?
Yes, expect some participation, nothing that you don't feel comfortable doing. Of course, it's not necessary for the performance. And it's really about time. It's just about timing and kind of the end of a chapter, naturally, as we all experience when we leave a school or a certain period of time in our life. That's really what it's about.
My name is Tara Martin, and I'm a fourth year drama student here at Queens.
And Tara, what have you written for this class?
I've written a play called Get Your Just Desserts. And basically the general idea is, it's described in the title, it's kind of a play on words. So on one hand, get your just desserts is someone getting their just punishment for something. So it's a murder mystery, and the suspects are going to be interviewed on stage, and the audience is actually going to be the jury and decide who has committed the murder, and they're going to get their just punishment at the end. And then on the other hand, it's also going to be just desserts, and the audience is going to get it. And so I'm going to be serving dessert and hot beverages, and they're going to be invited to the table and to come and participate in the event.
Sounds like a very satisfactory event for audiences and a lot of incentive to go. Where have you chosen in Theological Hall to perform?
Yeah, so I'm in Theological Hall room 102, which is a classroom here on the ground floor. And yeah, it's nice and big, lots of opportunity, kind of like a blank slate. And yeah, I chose it because it can go completely dark, and so I'm gonna have some moody candlelight kind of atmosphere, kind of mysterious. There's also a piano in there, and so I thought that would be fun. It's on wheels, so I can roll it around, and one of the characters will be playing the piano and maybe serenading the audience for a little bit. So that was kind of the incentive behind that.
Okay, so it sounds like if audience members are really interested in engaging with the performance, that this is a great show for them to check out for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, it's going to be very participatory, lots of interaction, but there will be an option if audience members don't want to interact. They can still sit farther in the back and just watch the drama unfold. But I'm hoping to have about 10 to 15 people at the table participating in the show.
Hi, my name is Ava Preston.
And Ava, what have you written for this class?
Well, my play is called I'm Sorry, Professor, and it takes place inside 102, where it's almost this kind of live podcast play where my character, Skylar, interviews a professor, and it's kind of breaking down podcast culture, kind of mainstream media and things like that. So, yes.
Okay, and 102 is the classroom that you are doing this class in, correct?
That's right.
What made you choose 102?
Well, we have our regular classes in 102, and I was kind of drawn in looking at the curtains and things like that, and I was like, you know what? I can really dress this place up. And I was just watching Jake Shane's podcast on Netflix, and I was thinking how fun it would be to kind of create a set and a space that kind of resembles that. So I thought 102 kind of fit into that kind of narrative there.
And did it shape the way that you wrote your play?
I would say so. So the play is also taking place with a live audience, and the character that I'm playing also addresses that live audience as well as, you know, viewers at home. So I thought that having kind of that select seating would almost work really well for what I'm writing. So I was kind of happy about that.
And do you encourage or expect audience participation?
I encourage some sort of kind of awkward interaction, whether that's just like some mutters or some like, do we say something? Do we not say something? I'm not expecting anything like huge or out of the ordinary, but just things that kind of make it the kind of special thing that it is.
Okay. Well, time is coming up pretty quickly.
Yes, it is.
I hope you're excited. I'm excited. I've been talking to everyone here, and it just seems like such a cool collection of performances.
My name is Baz O'Brien.
And Baz, what have you written for this class?
I have written something that I am calling a clown show. It is what it sounds like. It is a clown show. The frame is kind of that there is a carnival happening and that I have been hired to do hopefully what I do best, but that's something that you're going to have to figure out when you come to see it.
Okay, I like you're given a hook and drawing people in. What room are you performing in here in Theological?
So, my room is a little bit complicated because technically it's not a room. It is an in-between space. If anybody's been in Theo, it's outside of the balcony of Conn Hall. It's between the offices and the balcony. It's just that little space that's approximately, what, 6 feet, 4 inches tall. So, you know, if you're taller than that, maybe crouch when you come see it.
And how many audience members can this liminal space accommodate?
I believe it's 10 at a time.
And what made you choose this space? And did it inform the playwriting or the other way around?
Definitely informed the playwriting. I chose it because I've been in there once, and it gave me the weirdest feeling that I thought that I might as well try to use it for theater. There's two doors that lead into that space, and it does feel like you shouldn't be in there. And so I thought that I could use that.
Oh, I like this. Have you become more comfortable with it, or has it just become weirder as you've practiced your writing?
I think it's become a little bit like a home to me. It feels like a little niche in the wall that you can hide in. So yeah, it is comfortable for me. I think people who aren't used to being in there, sitting in there, will definitely feel it's not a traditional theater space.
Really leaning into it with the creepy clown.
Actually, interestingly, I'm not going creepy.
Okay.
I'm just not supposed to be there.
Ah.
I'm a delightful creature, but circumstances are not in my favor.
This sounds very intriguing. Can't wait to see it.
Hi, I'm Megan McDonald.
Megan, what have you written for Drama 439?
I've actually kind of pivoted a little bit from the usual course expectations. I'm doing an installation rather than a written piece. My show is called Dear Theological Hall, and it's really just a celebration of this building, because the whole time that the drama department has been a thing at Queens, we've used this building. So there's like decades of people that have memories, and like I feel like we take this building for granted because it's low-key falling apart. So I just want to like bring a little glimmer of hope and celebrate what we've been doing in this building for the past few years.
It is a wild building, and it's been interesting speaking to different students, and I've navigated through this space as well. There is so much to explore and so much that's idiosyncratic about it. Are you in one specific space for your installation?
My main installation is going to be in the basement in room 011, which this is the first year that it's been open to students. All past years it's been a faculty office, and it was actually Mo's office, our instructor, in the previous years. So it's kind of this new space that no one's really been in before other than faculty. So I'm kind of transforming that into the memory box, but then there's going to be little features around the building of memories that pertain to certain rooms.
Okay, so audience members might expect to do a little bit of a travel.
Yeah.
And what made you pick a room that no one had been in before?
Yeah, I think it's special in a way that it's new. Like, it's our production office this year, and I spent a lot of time in there as the production manager for one of the majors, so it just kind of felt different than all of my other 4 years, and I wanted people to be able to escape into this room, because, like, we do a lot of shows throughout the year in all of the rooms in this building, so I didn't want it to feel like, oh yeah, I'm going to 106 for another low-budget show. Like, I just wanted it to feel new and different and exciting.
And a space that even students that have been in Theo might never have seen before. Very cool. What's the capacity? Or is it just going to be like an ongoing tour throughout the evenings?
Yeah, so my show is kind of set up in that if you have a gap between other people's shows, you can just head downstairs and visit, and you can come back multiple times if you want to see more, and it's just kind of an ongoing thing that you can just pop by whenever you want.
Sounds like a perfect must-see stop during TheoFest. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So if people are listening and they are sold, they've listened to all of these descriptions of the plays, where do they find out more information? How can they find out about getting tickets?
Yes.
How much are tickets?
Yes. So this is one of my favorite things about this festival. Every ticket to this festival is free. So I'm very passionate about making work that supports the possibility for failure. And when I say failure, I don't mean like, you know, somebody has a horrible time and you don't feel very good. But so often when we make art, we're imagining what kind of success we'll get. You know, how many tickets will be sold? What's the kind of revenue we'll generate? The whole festival is free because all we want is an audience to be in relation to the work. We want audiences to be generous with the work. You know, there's a whole bunch of lines in many of the shows that make jokes about how the festival is free. You know, you didn't pay anything to be here, right? But, you know, it's important because the work should be accessible, but it's also important because the students should feel able to take risks, mm-hmm. right? And not worry, like, if I do something really weird and nobody comes, will I not have the revenue to show my work? It doesn't matter, right? You're in that learning moment where you're allowed to just swing big. So every ticket is free. There are 16 shows at the festival. Each show is between 15 and 20 minutes. And we have a website, theofest.ca, easy to remember, where you can see full summaries of the shows, read a little bit more about all the artists. And through that website, you'll be able to get tickets. So even though the tickets are free, we ask people to register because some shows have the capacity of, you know, 30, 40 people, and some shows have the capacity of two. So because we have shows in all different spaces, we are just trying to make sure that, you know, they can get the audience that they need. So you can get more information at our website, theofest.ca, or our Instagram handle is theofest2026. So again, you can read about the shows, the artists, buy tickets there.
And it is one of the most user-friendly sites I've seen. The who, what, where, when, how is laid out beautifully, and then more information about the artists and the plays. So very accessible there.
Thank you, Ara. All shout out to the students, right? They've been really well organized in getting this piece off the ground. Part of making new work is also making it easy for the audience to come. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean they have to be comfortable when they get there, but they should want to come through the doors. So yeah, please come check out this work. As their professor, I just feel so proud to be a part of this. You know, many of these students are graduating. Am I going to cry on live radio? Maybe. It feels so special to have this kind of moment with them. And I'm just so proud of all that they've accomplished. And I can't wait for people to see it.
I'm really excited. This seems like a very cool opportunity, very unique opportunity to see people kind of from the ground up in their careers. So yeah, check it out, theofest.ca. Thank you so much for joining me today. Can't wait for more.
Thank you so much, Ara. We can't wait to see you, folks.
Sign up now to take over CFRC's airwaves yourself. CFRC 101.9 FM invites all Queen's University student groups and Kingston community organizations to take over our airwaves. Join us on air for an hour to talk about your student group or community organization, and also present your own playlist of fun music chosen by your team. This is a great opportunity to talk about what your group does, how others can get involved or provide support, any big events your group has coming up, and how to keep up with the latest news about your group. Apply by visiting cfrc.ca/contact and selecting Apply for a Club Community Takeover. This project is made possible through the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.